July 24th. Welcome on in to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. As you just heard in the newscast, the Olympics is coming up.
Yes.
Fast approaching. Faster than Usain Bolt. It's coming.
Countdown is on.
Friday is the opening ceremonies. We're going to talk all about the Olympics today. We're going to talk about the games, the athletes, the events, the state of the Olympic movement. And we want to hear from you. Mm-hmm. As always, Cherry, our big question this hour. What event or athlete are you most excited to see? 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. Again, what event or athlete are you most excited to see?
Well, I can tell you I love the Olympics because it's all about excellence.
It is all about
And it's about breaking records and moving the human race forward, right?
Things you did.
I went big because you think about things that we thought we couldn't do.
You didn't think a person couldn't run that fast.
You didn't think a person could swim that fast. And boom, record is broken. And then somebody comes a few years later or a number of years later and they do it again.
And here's what I love. Mm-hmm. You can watch sports and just enjoy the sports.
Yeah.
You don't have all the emotional baggage of having followed one team your whole life. You know what I mean? It's like you meet some person, you don't even really know who they are, and you watch them do something amazing, and you're just in awe. You just appreciate the aesthetic of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's diverse. People from all over the world, all the colors. It's beautiful.
But not all is well in Olympic world.
That's true.
So we're going to talk about that as well. Mm-hmm. So again, what event or athlete are you most excited to see? 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. You ever been to the Olympics?
I've never been to the Olympics, but they're going to be in LA in a few years.
They sure are.
That's a chance.
That's an opportunity.
That's a chance.
I have been to a Winter Olympics.
Really? Yes. Which one?
2002, Salt Lake City.
Oh, that's
highly recommend. And they just announced today it's coming back to Salt Lake City 2034, 10 years
from
now.
So you're putting it on the calendar right now.
I think I might have just penciled it in.
Go ahead. So news chat.
We had penciled in, kind of, the notion that the Sixers were going to build a new arena in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. But now there's word bubbling up that they might build their new arena in New Jersey. Governor Phil Murphy told reporters earlier this week that New Jersey officials are chatting with Sixers ownership. Let's hear what the governor had to say.
We've been observing the lack of progress in Philadelphia. And we said, you know what, we're going to raise this with them. And we're serious about it. They appear to be serious about it. We'll see.
Lack of progress in Philadelphia. Well, Cherry, Sixers ownership, they clearly want their own arena. They're on the record saying that. Right now, they rent from the Flyers at the Wells Fargo Center. They had proposed building an arena near Penn's Landing. That idea, rejected. Then they moved on to this Market East proposal. Major pushback from Chinatown and other constituencies. We're still waiting on those city reports about this arena project in Market East. We thought we'd have those months ago. So clearly the folks in New Jersey are watching all this and saying,
Well, I have some thoughts on this.
Go ahead.
So my mantra has always been, love who loves you.
Love who loves you.
And
explain.
I say this, you know, there has been some pushback in the city of Philadelphia to this arena. And there has been some support as well from the unions, black business community. But city leaders, they've been slow to show the love. Mm-hmm. And so meanwhile, over the bridge, Camden officials, New Jersey officials,
they're
rolling out the red carpet, showing that love. But the other thing is,
they sure have.
While, you know, people... You get sexier when other people love you.
Oh, this is leverage.
Yeah,
there's
this is leverage. This is a reason for the city, hopefully, maybe the city will move faster because there's this interest. But I want to point out that Axios did a poll, and apparently Philly fans want the Sixers to stay in Philly.
Well, we shall see.
But we'll see what happens.
And I should note, the folks that own the Sixers already own the New Jersey Devils hockey team, which is in North Jersey.
Yeah.
The Sixers practice facility already in Camden, New Jersey. They got a huge tax break to build that facility. So there are lots of connections there. Mm-hmm. And I always knew this was going to be the leverage play at some point. But back in 2022, David Adelman, who's the point man for the arena project from the Sixers ownership group, told the Inquirer point blank, we're not going to New Jersey. Quote, this is a Philadelphia team. It is not moving.
Yeah.
Well, it seems like behind the scenes, they are rolling that back a little bit. Whether it's just a leverage play, we don't know. Mm-hmm. But perhaps they certainly are serious. And they've got the connections to New Jersey. There's no doubt about it.
So we'll be watching.
Almost certainly, by the way, it would be South Jersey. It's not like they're leaving the
and
market.
I mean, we can see Jersey from, you know, right, it's like right there. It's like over the bridge.
It's a question of where in the region they're going to locate. I don't think it's a question of whether they would leave Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. At least I haven't heard anything to that
Camden
effect.
Is like Philly adjacent.
Sure is.
You know,
it's
so,
literally.
Yeah.
Speaking of where to put things.
Oh, yes. Well, we talked about the legacy of President Joe Biden on our show Tuesday, and his presidency will end in January of 2025. And the question is, will he get a presidential library? And if so, where will he build it? The Philadelphia Inquirer had some ideas, you know, and I should point out, the presidents are not required to build a library.
Right.
And the National Archives, they automatically receive all the records from the presidency, and they'll take all of Biden's records in 2025, but he has the option to build it. And I read that, you know, he talked to his wife, Dr. Jill Biden, about, she said, honey, you should start thinking about what you want to do, you know, in the future. And Delaware, of course, is a strong contender. The University of Delaware is Biden's alma mater, right? That's a leading possibility. Syracuse University is interested. You know, Biden received his law degree from Syracuse, and his son, Beau, also graduated from their law school.
Okay.
Philly is on the list as well. Biden has taught at the University of Pennsylvania. And, of course, Dr. Jill Biden is from Philly. Jilly from Philly.
Yeah. Well, outside the city. But
and you probably guessed this, Avi. Scranton is on the list as well. And, of course, this is President Biden's birthplace.
Yeah.
And other presidents have chosen locations near their roots. So there's a lot going on. I mean, right now there are 13 physical libraries. Former President Barack Obama has his opening in 2026. That will be the 14th.
It's got to be Delaware, Cherry.
It's got to be, yeah. He's on the list. So.
How could it not be Delaware? He became...
And it would be Newark, Delaware,
yeah. So. Yeah, University of Delaware. Mm-hmm. I would be shocked if it wasn't Delaware. Frankly, I'd be a little hurt for the people of Delaware if it wasn't in Delaware.
And he's had his campaign headquarters there. He went back home to Delaware every single day. That's his home state.
Amtrak Joe. I mean, he was elected senator when he was 29 years old, over 50 years ago.
He loves some Delaware.
He's lived in Delaware. It's been his political base. I mean, I guess maybe this is a money thing. Who's going to put up the money for it?
Because they do have to raise that money.
Syracuse seems like just such a, like, why? Like, can you imagine the people upstate New York being like, wait, why is this here? It would be great to have a presidential library in driving distance, because the closest one right now is the FDR one, Hyde Park, New York. That's like and a half hours away.
That's far.
So it would be great to have one in our region.
You know, a little selfishness right there.
Yeah,
we'd
do
like
some
to
research.
Have it where we can drive.
Do a little research, you know?
Look through the Biden documents.
Yeah, I think it would be fun. I would be shocked if it wasn't Delaware. No inside information.
And I'm sure the Delawareans and folks will step up and help raise that money for sure.
This is not a shock.
Mm.
Pennsylvania is the home to a lot of political spending right now.
Yes.
New data from Axios shows that $507 million has already been spent in Pennsylvania this cycle. $189 million connected to the presidential race. A lot more connected to that Senate race between Bob Casey and Republican challenger Dave McCormick. Like, not a shock that Pennsylvania is where most of or the plurality of the money is being spent. No state is seeing more spending right now than Pennsylvania. It's a swing state. It's the biggest true swing state, because Florida doesn't really count. And it's got a big expensive Senate race. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of money spent here.
Yeah. And I saw that number for that Senate race, $193 million spent already. Yeah. And I mean, this morning I woke up to watch the news just to get caught up, and I saw like three attack ads in the presidential race. So it's going to continue.
Sometimes I miss growing up in a market that didn't have like a big swing state, I have to say, because it is relentless. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's move on to our newsmaker interview now, Jerry.
Yes. Yesterday we learned that New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez plans to step down on August 20th. The senator sent a letter of resignation to the Senate yesterday, and this comes after Menendez was convicted on 16 counts, including bribery, extortion, and acting as a foreign agent. The senator will be sentenced in October. Now, all eyes will be on November as Democratic Representative Andy Kim and Republican Curtis Bashaw battle for his seat. In the meantime, though, Governor Phil Murphy will have to appoint a replacement.
To talk about all of this and Senator Menendez's three-decade career in Congress, we have Jonathan Tamari. Jonathan is a congressional reporter for Bloomberg. He also happens to be from the great state of New Jersey. Jonathan Tamari, welcome to Studio 2.
Thanks for having me.
And so, Jonathan, Menendez made this decision to step aside after defying calls to resign, even threatening to run again as an independent. Just your reaction, was this a surprise that he made this decision?
Not really a surprise. He's a defiant guy, and he maintains that he's still maintains that he's innocent, but the writing was on the wall. He would have been very likely expelled by the Senate, and that's kind of an untenable position. There's a long history of senators who say they're going to stay and fight and then face the threat of expulsion who ultimately decide to resign instead. And so he's kind of falling into that category. So not totally shocking.
Which is why expulsion is so rarely used, I believe only 15 times. So Menendez's political career stretches back to the 70s, Union City, New Jersey. He became a congressman in the 90s, then ascended to the Senate. Does he have a political legacy outside of these corruption charges? I mean, what else might he be remembered for if this is indeed the end of his political career?
Well, I think it's important to note that he broke barriers for Latino politicians at pretty much every stage of his career, from his time in the state legislature in New Jersey to Congress. At one point, he was, I believe, the third ranking House member, and then became the first Latino chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. So those are all big steps. And in the Senate, he was mostly known for his influence on foreign affairs. He was a really strong ally of Israel, very hawkish for a Democrat, and as well worked on immigration reform. He was part of the group that put together the compromise that actually passed the Senate in 2013 but never got through the House. So those are the two things that I think he was most known for in the Senate.
Yeah, and now he's going to step down about a month from now, and the governor of New Jersey will have to fill that seat. What are the steps? What do you know about how that will happen?
So the governor basically gets to pick whoever he wants. And so that's, it's being very closely watched. The word is that he's wants to appoint a woman, or is leaning, I should say, towards likely appointing a woman. That's not guaranteed at this point, but leaning towards appointing a woman. There's never been a woman senator from New Jersey, so would potentially make history in that way. There is a Democratic nominee in that race, Andy Kim. He's a congressman, but it sounds like the governor's not going to go that route. We should note Andy Kim defeated the governor's wife in a primary, so there might be some hard feelings there. People close to the governor also say they don't want to take away a House seat from Democrats when the House is so closely divided. So it looks like basically he'll appoint somebody who will serve out the rest of the term, the rest of this year, and then whoever wins that November election will take over in January.
Do you have a sense of what all of this means for New Jersey politics? I mean, this is a state that frankly doesn't have a stellar reputation on the corruption front. We all remember, you know, Abscam many decades ago. I mean, this whole Menendez saga, can you explain what it means for New Jersey?
I mean, it is another one that's going to go in that same kind of legacy as Abscam, in part because Senator Menendez had been indicted before on a potential bribery scheme. And now that trial ended in a mistrial, so he was not convicted. But there's been this air around the senator for him, and it's strange because strictly as a senator, he was very effective. He chaired a powerful committee. He knew how to work the levers of power. He was, very erudite on policy and kind of a street fighter on politics, but he also had this shadow that followed him, and that's something that I think you see a lot in New Jersey. It's not unique to New Jersey, but it certainly happens a lot in that state.
Yeah, that is Jonathan Tamari, congressional reporter for Bloomberg, New Jersey native, filling us in on all of the context here as it finally has happened. Robert Menendez is resigning, he says, from the Senate next month. Jonathan Tamari, thanks for the time on Studio 2.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Next up, to an event that's got some of its own corruption issues.
The
Summer Olympics. But we're not just going to talk about the corruption angles, Cherry. We're also going to talk about what people are looking forward to as the Paris Olympics gets ready to kick off.
I know. And we want to know what events and athletes you are excited about. What is your favorite event, or who is your favorite athlete? You can call us or email studio2@whyy.org. Our number, 888-477-9499. I love the sweet sound of the Olympics.
Let
me
read in a comment here. We got Jamie who says, I enjoy watching basketball, gymnastics, and track events, both women and men. They are the most thrilling to me. I feel a connection with the athletes in these sports. Thanks for
that
comment, Jamie. So again, what are you looking forward to? What event? What athletes? Studio2@whyy.org. We'll be back with a big conversation on
the Olympics. Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. The Olympics are almost here.
Mm-hmm.
Can you feel it?
I can feel it.
You can feel it.
That music got me going.
The opening ceremony is this Friday, midday, because Paris is 6 hours ahead of us. Cherry, you're an Olympics fan, right?
I am.
The event you're going to watch most closely is
track and field.
All the track and field.
Gymnastics, probably, and swimming.
And swimming. Those are your big three.
How about you?
Definitely those three. Those three are big for me. You know, I like the basketball for sure.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a hoops guy no matter mm-hmm. what the venue is. But, you know, track and field, I think, is the tops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's so many different types of track and field events, too.
Yeah,
so there's just something for everyone with track and field.
Yeah.
We also have a question for you, mm-hmm. our listeners this hour. What athletes or events are you looking forward to watching? You can email us, studio2@whyy.org. Call 888-477-9499. We also have a couple of experts to get us primed for the games, explain everything happening in Paris. Les Carpenter is the Washington Post Olympics writer. Les, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
And David Wharton is a staff writer for the Los Angeles Times. David, welcome to Studio 2.
Good to be with you.
And so, got to ask you both, Paris, the city of love, the city of lights will be the backdrop to this. Both of you get to cover that. What are you most excited about for the Paris Olympics? And David, we'll start with you.
You know, God, there's so much going on. I think actually what I'm most excited about is Paris. First of all, the food's really good. But second of all, they've turned the whole city into sort of a gigantic playing field. So you're going to have beach volleyball at the foot of the Eiffel Tower. You're going to have fencing in the Grand Palais, equestrian and modern pentathlon. Not usually one of my favorites, but that will be at Versailles. So ooh. I'm really interested to see kind of these sports play out in these really iconic venues, temporary venues that have been built in these landmarks.
Wow. Les, what are you most excited about? You're in the middle of it all,
agree.
Too.
Yeah, well, I am. And I agree with David and everything that he says. The fact that this is the first Olympics after two that have been essentially closed down with COVID restrictions, without fans, with, you know, an emptiness. Now you not only open it up, but you open it up in Paris and you open it up in the venues that he mentioned is spectacular. But I have to say that right now it just doesn't feel like Paris because they've shut down so much, especially along the Seine, because they're going to do this huge, dramatic, sort of unheard of opening ceremony on the river. There's fences all around. There's empty streets. It looks like the early days of COVID through some of the most iconic parts of Paris right now. And I'm sitting in front of the main press center here, and I mean, you may be able to hear behind me, but there's just constant streams of police cars because there's, I think, 30-some thousand police here in town to protect that.
Wow.
In fact, there's a fleet of them walking toward me right now, and I'll have to behave myself. But
we need you on the air, Les.
So I'm anxious for the Olympics to actually start because everything so far has been about, shutdowns, doom and gloom, fear, and it would be nice to kind of get back to the sort of happiness that I think this is about.
Yeah. Speaking of the happiness that this is about, I do want to ask about that opening ceremony, but before we get there, Les, what's the state of the Olympic movement right now? Because it kind of feels like we were at a low point pretty mm-hmm. recently. Maybe we're still at a low point, and that perhaps Paris can be the bounce back moment. I mean, what is the state of the Olympic movement, Les Carpenter?
Yeah, I wrote about this about a week ago, and it's very interesting right now because you've come from those pandemic shutdown Olympics. I think overall you kind of see a downward trend in viewership, and it certainly plummeted in the last two Olympics, but they were also on a time zone that doesn't add up very well to America being all the way in Asia. I think there's this hope that everybody has that this is the Olympics that will save everyone. And NBC is going all out, for instance. They've built a four-story tower to Trocadero across from the Eiffel Tower. They're going to do all these shows. And they brought all these people in, and they brought influencers and, you know, celebrities. And I feel like every corporation is doing the same thing. And everyone is putting this gigantic hope into this Olympics. And I think when you ask, what are you interested in seeing? I'm interested in seeing if all this really truly is going to work out for everyone. Mm. Is it going to be everything that they hope because they put so much into it?
Yeah. And David, I got to ask you, I mean, you heard Les talk about the who's who. I've heard some names dropped about who's going to be there outside of just the athletes to try to get more eyes on the Paris Olympics. Can you give us a little bit of a preview of who those people are?
Well, I think that, you know, the two big names are Snoop Dogg and Kelly Clarkson. Okay. And listen, you may laugh at Snoop Dogg, but I just walked out of a press conference with the U.S. fencing team, and they were all talking about how Snoop Dogg's been around the village. He's been talking to athletes. You know, they're all thrilled about it, and he's been promising to come see their events. And I know that NBC has really, as Les mentioned, they got to make back those billions they paid to the International Olympic Committee. So they're really trying to give these games, I think, a different flavor with some of these personalities being on-air personalities, not the kind of people you would expect to see in sports. And so, you know, the athletes seem to like it so far. I don't know how it's going to play out on television, but we're going to find out.
Yeah. Speaking with David Wharton, staff writer for the Los Angeles Times, by the way, LA, the home of the next Summer Olympics. Mm-hmm. We'll get to that later. Mm-hmm. Also speaking with Les Carpenter, who covers the Olympics for the Washington Post. Our big question this hour, what event or athlete are you most excited about for the 2024 Summer Olympics in Paris? Lynn says, I watch Simone Biles. Mm-hmm. She is phenomenal. Going to get to gymnastics later, but David Wharton just mentioned a different flavor, and I want to get back to this opening ceremony. Les Carpenter, an opening ceremony not in a stadium. What's going on?
And this is the first time that's ever happened at an Olympics. And it's an enormous experiment. You know, not only are they not doing it out, you know, in a stadium, you know, not just going down, say, the Champs-Élysées, they're doing it actually in the Seine with all those river boats, and they're going to put the athletes on all those long flat boats that everyone always sees, and it's going to go for, you know, 3 miles down the Seine or up the Seine. I forget, you always get it wrong, and people will be mad at you, but which direction it flows. But you're going to get the Trocadero across from the Eiffel Tower, and there's going to be this big ceremony that's going to involve the Eiffel Tower and a river, and all you can think of is all the things that could go wrong with mm-hmm. that. And if they pull it off, it'll be spectacular. It'll be amazing. It'll probably be the thing you talk about for months. And if it doesn't, then, you know, that could be the thing we talk about for months.
Yeah, I'm holding my breath, yeah. I got to say.
And Les, you kind of touched on this, the security of that. How do you secure something like that? It's a lot easier to secure a stadium rather than
a whole river
with people lined up out there.
Well, I mean, first of all, that's why this giant barrier is around the river and all of that kind of central Paris area. There's going to be many different levels of security you're going to have to go through if you have a ticket to be able to sit. You have to have a ticket to be able to sit on the river. There's going to be this enormous police presence that I described before. And I think, obviously, there's intelligence. You know, that's how they're really, truly going to protect this is, you know, good old-fashioned intelligence and track down whatever threats there might be.
Monique comments on our question about which event are you most excited about and says, I watch almost anything. I set my clock to wake up in the middle of the night to see things live. I watch all channels. I'm so excited.
Go, Monique.
But, of course, you don't have to do the middle of the night this time, mm-hmm. at least not as much, because it's only a six-hour time difference. David Wharton, I want to ask about the big events that everyone is looking forward to. And I want to set up with a clip here. Because we're going to play some clips of some bigger moments in Olympic history. This is Romanian gymnast Nadia Comăneci recording one of her 7 perfect 10 routines at the 1976 Olympics in Montreal.
That's the dismount, but what a performance. Coming at you in brilliant form. And 10, she's got another 10. The crowd ecstatic. That's 3 times she's achieved the perfect score. It makes one wonder where the judges go from here.
And where they go from here, by the way, is to Simone Biles,
yes,
who, when you watch that
yes,
video, and
yes,
it's an amazing
yes.
routine, Simone Biles really does blow it out of the water. If you don't know her, she's the great American gymnast back again in Paris. David Wharton, is she the big star? Is she the one that NBC is really betting on? Are there others? I mean, or is Simone Biles like the big attraction?
Well, I think she's certainly, you know, one of the handful of big attractions. My colleague Tukmi Nguyen wrote about the fact that she's kind of revolutionized the sport. I mean, they're naming, you know, naming things after her in the sport. And also after what happened in Paris, I think that people really, you know, there was sort of a personal connection in terms of her talking about mental health issues and being very open about that. So, you know, I think a lot of people will be watching her to see how she does here, and a lot of people feel closer to her. You know, I'm, you know, as you mentioned earlier, I'm kind of a track and field guy. So I love the 100 meter dash. And we have, you know, for me, that's one of the most amazing things in the Olympics, because it's this moment where the entire stadium goes silent. You know that everything's going to happen over the next 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. And there's just a sense of electricity. And we have now these two great personalities, Noah Lyles for the men and Sha'Carri Richardson for the women, who not only are extremely talented, but they also have these kind of superstar personalities. They have this real presence on the track. So I'm really looking forward to that moment when they get in the blocks and they say ready and everyone's silent, and we're going to see, you know, if they're going to come through.
Oh, I got chills. Yeah, best 10 seconds in sports right there.
I love it. Love it. Love it. Kiera comments, track and field. It's exciting. I find myself screaming at the TV. Go, go, go. I do the exact same thing. Actually, I do that for many of the competitions, she says, especially swimming. So I guess I just like to see great competitors. I want to pivot to swimming because that's another one that people absolutely love. One of the swimmers that everybody's been talking about is Katie Ledecky.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about the swimming competitions. What is it going to be like? What are people looking forward to? And Les, I'll throw that one to you.
Well, it's interesting because this may not quite be as dominant a U.S. team as we've been accustomed to in many recent Olympics. Now, that said, they're still going to win medals. It's still going to be a good team. And it may still wind up being the best team here. But there is more depth in other countries as well. I think Australia is going to be a good threat. I think Canada could be a good threat. And then, of course, there's those Chinese swimmers that you probably heard about from the whole doping controversy that even has taken over today's news. And so I think those are all going to be things that are going to be talked about at swimming. And getting back to Ledecky, yes, I think she'll still be a star, but it may not be quite as big as certainly in other years.
Speaking,
I'll still be watching.
Speaking of the good old days, though, I want to play a clip now. This is Michael Phelps narrowly winning the 100-meter butterfly at the 2008 Olympics en route to a record 8 gold medals.
Phelps above him in lane 5. I don't know if he's going to catch him. He gets it done again.
He did it.
He got it again. For the second straight Olympics, Phelps at the end gets it done. 4 years ago, Crocker. Now it's Cabbage. 1/100th of a second.
Oh, the excitement. Jane emails, because we did ask what you're most looking forward to this year. Jane says, my family of 2 daughters, 1 professional water polo coach, and me, we are all looking forward to seeing women's water polo, a sport that doesn't get enough coverage and recognition, with the strongest athletes and fierce competitors. Best of luck to the USA water polo team and Coach Krikorian. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Thanks for that email, Jane. So speaking of sports that maybe don't get as much love or kind of new to us, David Wharton with the Los Angeles Times, what is new this year? I mean, breakdancing I've heard about. I mean, what's new to the games? What's emerging?
Watch out there now. You have to call it breaking. If you
breaking,
call it
I'm
breaking,
sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
They know you're an old guy if you do that. And I'm an old guy too, but I learned that lesson. Yeah, I mean, breaking's kind of a one-off. You know, LA did not pick breaking for their games, but this is always sort of a big proving ground. And in Tokyo, we saw, sport climbing actually do quite well. And surfing and skating have come to the fore. So breaking has a chance now. And even if they're not in LA, if they put on a good show, they may be back later on. So, I'm kind of really interested in how that's going to do. I after it was announced, I went and covered a breaking competition in Los Angeles. They had an international circuit competition. It was indoors. It was very loud and it was very long, and I had no idea what was going on. But these dancers are very athletic, and so I'll be interested to see how that plays out on television and what kind of response that gets.
Quick follow-up though, David. So it's not picked for 2028, but it could still come back in 2032, 36, something like that?
Yeah, what the International Olympic Committee does is they have a certain set program of a whole bunch of sports, but they allow the host city to pick anywhere from one to five sports or to sort of add to the program. And that sort of goes... that goes to what is popular in that country. Breaking apparently is very popular in France. So they chose that because they think they can sell tickets to it and it'll look good on television. So if breaking puts on a good show, and believe me, there are so many sports that are fighting to get into the Olympics because there's so much exposure. It's worth millions and millions of dollars to a sport. So if breaking does well, maybe they can sort of fight their way back in a future Olympics and fight their way onto the standard program.
Yeah, I got to read this comment from David from Palmyra, New Jersey, who says, I will not be watching breaking.
Uh-oh.
Maybe, he says, after watching Hulu's breakdancing documentary origin story, Break In on the One. He says, breakdancing at the Olympics seems so vanilla. And it's kind of ruining the true spirit of the artwork.
There's so skeptics already on breaking.
Yeah,
uh-oh.
Skeptics already. But I had read that a couple of sports got dropped, karate and baseball. So what does, the IOC kind of like, how do they decide which sports to bring in and which ones to drop and why?
Well, we talked a little bit earlier, Les talked about the popularity of the games and the Olympics are fighting for relevancy. Their audience is growing older and getting smaller. And so they need to bring in the younger viewers. And part of that is trying to get to streaming and to the sort of, sites where young people go for content. The other part is trying to find sports that will draw them in. And so that's really kind of one of the main things. And you mentioned some of the pushback. We've seen that. I mean, we saw that in snowboarding, and now snowboarding is a staple of the Winter Games. We've seen that in surfing and in skating. So there's always going to be that, especially in these sort of quote-unquote lifestyle sports where a lot of people don't like the idea that you're turning something that was supposed to be sort of freedom of expression and applying rules and judges to it.
So the
IOC is looking for ways to get eyeballs and to get young viewers and to get young people to enter into that Olympic movement.
All right. Well, that is David Wharton, staff writer at the Los Angeles Times. We're talking as well with Les Carpenter, who covers the Olympics for the Washington Post. And we're going to talk more about the Olympics, including some of the troubles and the challenges that the games are facing in Paris after a quick break. And again, our big question this hour, what are you looking forward to most about Paris 2024? Email us studio2@whyy.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. We are talking about the Olympics, getting a preview of the Paris Games ahead of Friday's opening ceremony. And we have two reporters with us, both in Paris, covering the Games.
Lucky,
I'm so
lucky,
jealous.
Lucky.
Okay, we have Les Carpenter, Washington Post Olympic writer. We also have David Wharton, staff writer for the Los Angeles Times. Welcome back.
And our big question this hour, what athlete or event are you most excited to see? You can email us, studio2@whyy.org, or call 888-477-9499. Marisol says, I just love the whole Olympic vibe, the rings, the theme music, the anthems, the emotions, the drama, the internationality of it, the camaraderie, the beauty and awe of a brilliant athletic performance. I just love it all. Okay, now we're going to rain a little bit on Marisol's parade. Because we do have to talk a little bit, Cherry, about some of the issues that are dogging these games.
Yes, and Les Carpenter, I want to ask you a question about some of the scandals. And one is related to the Chinese swimmers. I read that the IOC was not happy about the United States digging into an alleged cover-up. What's the status there? And kind of update people on what happened there and what the status is.
Yeah, and it's such a complicated thing. I'll try to be as concise as possible and not bore everybody. But essentially, it was uncovered recently that 23 Chinese swimmers right before the Tokyo Olympics, which were held in 2021, as you remember, because of the pandemic, tested positive for the substance that people are suddenly testing positive for called trimetazine. This was the drug that the figure skater Kamila Valieva famously tested positive for. And looking through things, the World Anti-Doping Agency said, with the inability to get into China and relying on Chinese officials, said, well, it appears to be an accidental contamination. Mm-hmm. I think there was a pushback in the United States about that, saying, how is it possible that a drug that comes in a pill could be suddenly flowing through air purifiers or like a air conditioning system, which is essentially what China was saying. So there's great skepticism on this. Mm-hmm. There's been congressional hearings on this. There may or may not be an actual FBI investigation into this. And so I think the IOC is a little panicked and a little perturbed. So today was going to be this very benign, kind of predictable awarding of the 2030 Olympics to Salt Lake City. They have a new system now for doing this. So there's the vote that comes from the IOC members is just really ceremonial. It's no big deal at all. And then in the middle of that, all of a sudden, IOC officials led by the president, Thomas Bachstard, said, well, we need to put bigger restrictions on America, talking about the World Anti-Doping Agency and making these criticisms and potentially, perhaps using law enforcement, though they didn't quite say all that. Wow. But it was made very clear. It was very orchestrated, and it was a very strong power move by the IOC, and it kind of put the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee and the Salt Lake City organizers in a bit of a corner. Now, I don't know who they possibly would have picked for that Olympics. There is no candidate really for 2034. But, everyone kind of had to sign a paper saying, all right, we will go ahead and not criticize the World Anti-Doping Agency in so many words. I'm trying to narrow that down as much as possible. But the point of it is, it was a very strong power move by the IOC to stop criticism of an organization tied to the IOC.
Wow.
It is a winding saga. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of moving parts. And I think what it brings up is this larger idea that political tensions could someday disrupt the Olympic movement to the point where it dies off. And, Russia, it's not boycotting these games. It's not 84, but they're sending very few athletes. David Wharton, can you explain what's going on with Russia, one of the world's great Olympic powerhouses?
Yeah, a powerhouse, but they've sort of been under pressure, under the thumb of the IOC and the whole sporting world for sort of long-running doping controversies and state-sponsored doping. And so they've sort of been on, it's not even double secret probation, they've been on probation for a long time. And so now, well, not even now, in recent games, Russian athletes can only compete as what they call neutrals, which is basically an athlete who can provide enough evidence to the international athletic community showing that they haven't been doping, that they've had a string of responsible tests and can be admitted, but then there's, you know, all these arguments over where, you know, we don't call them Russians sometimes we just call them neutral athletes, and they can't raise the Russian flag, they can't have the anthem. So this has sort of been a push and pull, and there's sort of been a lot of athletes who say don't let them compete at all because they have this long history of cheating. Mm. And so this has kind of been an ongoing battle within the Olympic movement for a number of years now. And it gets down to this idea that, as you mentioned, this is a really this is an Olympic power, and people like to see the best athletes on the field. But at the same time, there's this concern over whether they're playing by the rules and whether they should be allowed to be on the field.
Very interesting. I want to ask, because we're talking about world issues, and the war in Gaza is something that a lot of folks have been talking about and thinking about. And I understand that there will be some Palestinian athletes at the Olympics. Les, do you know anything about that? And so folks can look out for them.
Yeah, there'll be a small delegation of Palestinian athletes. And of course, there'll be a fairly strong Israeli presence. This is normal. I mean, so obviously now you have all this tension added to it. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. Tonight, Israel will play a soccer game here in Paris. I don't know what the police presence will be like for it. But again, as you may have heard, there's sirens behind me right now. I mean, we keep talking about, hey, this great opening ceremony, this great open Olympics, all these exciting things. And all we've been talking about the last 3 or 4 days is the things we've just been talking about, Russia and Palestine and Israel. And I do think it will impact. I think we will see protests. This mm-hmm. is a city of protests. I think we'll see protests against Russia, the few athletes that are here that will be the quote-unquote independent neutrals, the Russians. We will see protests, I bet, of Israel. We may see protests of the Palestinians. I think we will see a lot of this here. I don't know if it will trickle into what people see on television during mm-hmm. events themselves, but I'm expecting a lot of it to surround this Olympics. And Paris is just sort of a center of this kind of thing. Yeah. And it'll be an interesting side to this Olympics. Yeah. And it may wind up being the story. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, the world doesn't stop just because the Olympics start. Mm-hmm. That's for sure. Before we get both of you out of here, David Wharton, I want to ask you about L.A. 2028. Mm-hmm. I assume L.A. officials are watching 2024 Paris closely. Probably Angelinos are as well. Are people excited about L.A. 2028, the games returning to the United States? Is there skepticism? What's the mood in Los Angeles right now, 4 years out?
Yeah. As a reporter, I wish there was more of a mood. But I would say that the fact that, you know, first of all, L.A. 28 is not building anything.
Yeah.
So we don't have any big construction sites or cranes that we can see on the skyline, you know, putting up some stadium somewhere. So I really don't think that the Olympics have much of a presence in L.A. right now. The L.A. is sort of used to big events, you know, whether it's the Super Bowl or the Academy Awards. So people just sort of expect that. Mm-hmm. And there's just also this thing in L.A. where in 1984, for those of us who are old enough to be around, it was actually this great 17 days when there was like no traffic. And because, you know, they changed the working hours and the hours that trucks could deliver. And so it was almost like heaven in L.A. And so there's this kind of institutional memory where even if people now weren't there, their parents or their grandparents talk about how wonderful it was for those 17 days.
Interesting.
And so I think that people are just sort of waiting for it to come along, but they kind of expect that to just that sort of thing to happen in L.A. And there is a small sort of opposition group, the No Olympics LA, but they haven't gained a lot of traction yet. I think that, you know, people, you know, as you mentioned before, and as Les was talking about, it's sort of a recurring Olympic cycle where people, you know, there's all sorts of controversy and trouble and complaints, and then the games start and everybody falls in love with the athletes and the stories that they have to tell. And then when the games end, you can go back to complaining again.
17 days off of complaining. Mm-hmm. Doesn't sound too bad. Well, that's David Wharton, staff writer for the Los Angeles Times. You also heard this hour from Les Carpenter, Olympic writer for the Washington Post. Les and David, thanks to you both. Good luck in Paris. I know you have a very busy fortnight ahead of you.
Well, thank you.
Now we have dozens of athletes from our own region competing in Paris. Yay. And to give us a rundown of who is there and who to root for is Nick Kariuki, trending news reporter with Billy Penn at WHYY. Nick, welcome to Studio 2. It's good
Cherry.
To have you here.
Hi, Abby.
Nick, it's great to have you here. First, I'm going to read in a comment from Judy, who says she stopped her car to email us because mm-hmm. she's so excited to see Curtis Thompson, USA javelin champion. Yesterday evening, our town, Florence, New Jersey, turned out to cheer him on as he was escorted through town on his way to the airport for Paris. He was so gracious to say thanks to everyone and high-five all the kids who ran Aww. Up to the limo. Judy, thanks for that email. I got to be honest, I hadn't heard of Curtis Thompson.
Me
I'm going to look him up after the show. But
go
we wanna,
Curtis.
Well, go Curtis. And shout out Florence, New Jersey. But we want to mm-hmm. talk with you, Nick, about some of the local athletes competing. Let's start with Kalia Copper, a women's basketball player. What's her backstory?
Yeah, she's currently playing with the Phoenix Mercury. She was born in North Philly. She played her high school ball at Girard College and then went on to Rutgers. And yeah, has a WNBA championship, was the finals MVP in 2021 of the Sky, and is now been like a four-time WNBA All-Star.
Wow.
Yeah. All right, so Kalia Copper, North Philly. She's on the USA women's basketball team, and they're usually the favorites to win gold, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think men's or women's, they're definitely one like the major contender, and everyone else is kind of trying to play up to their standard. A bonus mention on the team is that the head coach is also Cheryl Reeve, who's from Gloucester County, New Jersey.
All right.
Was a player and assistant coach at LaSalle.
All right.
LaSalle. And I know you love soccer, and our region will be represented. Give us the overview there.
Yeah, there are four players from kind of the Pennsylvania, Delaware, and mm-hmm. New Jersey region. I think the three kind of closest standouts are Jack McGlynn and Nathan Harriel. There are two players on the Philadelphia Union, and they are going into the team as the first members of the Union to be selected for the Olympics. In the
on the USA men's soccer
team. On the men's soccer team, excuse me. A former Union player and Medford, New Jersey native Paxton Aronson is also on the team. He's more recently moved to a German club, Eintracht Frankfurt, and has been loaned out most recently to Dutch club Utrecht.
Cool. So the USA men's soccer team, mm-hmm. we're going to have a lot of regional representation there. That's great. And then we talked with this swimmer, mm-hmm. Matt Fallon,
yes.
who is a current Penn student
mm-hmm.
and has a pretty darn good chance, we think, to win an event in Paris. What can you tell us about Matt Fallon?
He's definitely in the 200-meter breaststroke. He is the best in the U.S. He broke the U.S. record that had stood since around 2016.
Wow, that's a longstanding record, yeah.
So he's got the best time in the U.S. It is currently the fifth fastest all-time record. The current world record is by China's Chin Wai Wang, and I think we mentioned kind of the...
Right, the Chinese doping scandal.
Yeah, the speculation around that. As far as... That there's a great chance of podium for him.
Wow. Awesome. And I about shout out to Matt because we loved having him on the show and his love of Wawa, buffalo chicken sandwich.
Pineapple or something.
Love him. And I love this story. We have a para triathlete from our area. Tell us about her. I love this story.
Yeah, it's Amelia Perry. She was born in Philly. As a child, her family moved to Osaka, Japan, but she returned in 2011. To study exercise science at Ursinus College and graduated in 2015. She sustained a spinal cord injury in 2017 and then started competing in wheelchair racing and triathlon and picked it up pretty quickly. She came first in the 2022 Broad Street Run for wheelchair racing and was also the 2022 Para Triathlon National Champion. So we can expect her to be a pretty strong contender for her event, which will be the paratriathlon.
And that starts right after the Olympics?
Yes.
Yeah, awesome.
The Paralympics right after the Olympics. And real quick, before we get you out of here, I think there's a fencer, went to school in Center City, and someone to watch out for on the fencing side. We love fencing.
We do.
Right, Cherry?
Shout out to fencers.
Shout out to fencing. So what can we look for in the fencing competition?
Yeah, there's Maya Weintraub, and she was born and raised in Philly.
Yeah. I love it.
Trained in the Fencing Academy of Philadelphia. She is currently a student at Princeton and has competed on the Tigers fencing team. There's a couple other team members with her. She's currently ranked on the U.S. Olympic team. She's currently ranked 13th in the world in the foil discipline. That's one of the three kind of
foil.
Yes.
There's the epee and there's foil. Sometimes it's hard to keep them all straight, but that's what the Olympics are for. You relearn this stuff every 4 years,
Can you guess
right?
the third one?
Oh, God. Epee, foil, and saber?
Correct.
Oh,
hey!
How about that? All right, I passed the test. Thank you so much, Nick Karaoke, for filling us in on all the local Olympians. And by the way, Nick's got a piece up at BillyPenn.com that's got like the full
list.
All
of the folks.
There's dozens and dozens, so you can check that out at BillyPenn.com. Nick Karaoke, trending news reporter with Billy Penn at WHYY. Thanks for your time today, sir.
Thank you both for having me.
And thanks for quizzing me, too, but keeping me on my toes. Keep the host honest, Cherry.
I love it. And we got to shout out Robert, who says, I'm going to Paris to watch my fourth Olympics. And Robert will be attending track and field.
Oh,
so shout out to Robert. I'm so jealous. I wish I could have been in your suitcase, Robert.
Yeah.
Goodness.
Take me as a carry-on, Robert.
I know.
Come on.
I could fit in there. Come on. But that wraps our show today. Thank you so much to our producers, Debbie Builder, Andreas Copes, and John Ahrens. Al Banks engineered today's show. Kevin McCrory is our executive producer from Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman there. Not going to Paris. Sticking around here.
Maybe next time. When they come to L.A.
Yeah. Studio 2 live from L.A.?
I like it.
All right. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you tomorrow.